Welcome to Mobile Estate Planning with your host, Michael Bailey. Over a decade ago, attorney Michael Bailey turned his attention to estate law after he recognized the unacceptable number of adults without proper end-of-life planning. Michael recognizes that many of his clients have difficulty finding the time for making a proper estate plan. That's why he became the Mobile Estate Planner. He will go to wherever you are to assist you with your estate planning, including writing wills, trusts, and giving you the information you need to avoid probate. Now, ATX, Ask the Experts, presents Mobile Estate Planning with your host, Michael Bailey.
All right, good afternoon. Welcome to Mobile Estate Planning with Michael Bailey here on 560 KLZ, The Source, so we can do something besides just leave you alone. Just wanted to give you, we can talk about estate planning today because, it's always good to talk about estate planning. It's hard really to, it's what I do. I could talk not about estate planning, but then you'd wonder why in the world did we start to talk about estate planning? Why in the world did we start to listen to a show called Mobile Estate Planning with Michael Bailey if we're not going to talk about estate planning? It's one of those things. We should talk about estate planning. So phone number to talk to us on the air is 303-477-5600. Sorry, let me try that again. Trailed off. 303-477-5600. And my direct line is 720-394-6887. That's the direct line is if you would like to talk to me about your own personal stuff and you don't really want your own personal stuff on the air, and if you don't want to, just sometimes we talk about things in estate planning that aren't necessarily what we want to broadcast to the entire world. I had a client just the other day where we were talking and they were asking me about, if I have a problem with my daughter. I said, okay, what's wrong with your daughter? Well, my daughter has decided that it's a really good idea to live off of the land and that anybody who owns a car is evil. And so since I own a car, they never want to talk to me. And my response was exactly this. Huh. Because, really, what do you do with that besides, that's a little different than what most people do. So I was like, okay, I understand that. But, we had a conversation about, what had gone on with their daughter and why they'd arrived at this and, whether or not that was something that we needed to talk about or what we needed to do. So, we had a whole thing where we talked about, hey, what do we need to do? Had a whole question where we talked about what is it that, how are we going to treat this daughter? Are we going to treat this daughter the same as if she is, going to inherit the same as all the other kids? Or was this the type of thing where we didn't want to? And then the other day I had another client who wanted to talk to me, who they've decided they want to leave everything to their grandkids and nothing to their kids. Now, one of their kids is probably going to be perfectly fine with this, not going to have any issues with it whatsoever because the one child is a multimillionaire and, a practicing doctor, I think. I don't remember. Maybe I'm mixing matching clients. Just has millions upon millions of dollars. So, they're not going to need money from the parents. The other kid is not quite as well off, not a multimillionaire. They got only, a couple hundred thousand dollars. Oh, woe is them having a couple hundred thousand dollars, right? I would love to have a couple hundred thousand dollars. I don't. I'm happy just to have a couple thousand dollars, maybe even a couple hundred dollars. I think there was a time in my life, probably when I was a young child, that even a couple of dollars would have been awesome. But no matter where they were, so they had this entire thing of how they wanted to do it. And the mother was trying to justify to me, I don't even feel bad because I don't even, I don't feel like, this is something that I need to do. And, it's better to have my kids who can, you know, I don't need to take care of my kids because I want to take care of my grandkids. You know, other people, they decide, hey, you know what? We'd like to take care of the kids, and then the kids can pass them on to the grandkids. So it all depends on family situations and which people are most direction most people are comfortable going. But they definitely want to have this conversation. You want to understand this conversation. You want to be able to make your own decisions. I just met with somebody where the husband was pretty sure he needed only a will, and the wife was pretty sure they needed a trust. So we had a conversation about the benefits and drawbacks of a trust and the benefits and drawbacks of just doing a will. And even after we had that conversation, they still needed to talk to decide which one they wanted to do, because it was going to be a decision between the two of them. It's probably going to, you know, might have been a joint trust that I wrote, might have been, you know, I mean, individual wills, because individual wills or, you know, joint wills really don't tend to work all that well. I mean, they can create more problems than they solve. And so we had, you know, this whole conversation about it, and, you know, everybody was like, oh, okay. You know, and I even got an email this morning from a client who we'd had a long conversation about what we wanted to do. And then they changed their mind. So they wanted to let me know before I wrote everything. I'm like, okay. So, you know, whatever options we'd gone through and we'd picked and we thought we'd decided upon, they changed their mind. Now, when we sign stuff, we hope that they don't change their mind all the time. So we have to go back and amend the documents all the time. That can become expensive when, you know, they're like, oh, well, we wrote these documents, but now we'd like to change our mind. Can you just go ahead and make the changes? I'm like, sure. At my hourly rate, here you go. And, you know, more than happy to make whatever changes need to be made. But you know, if we have the conversations, we can talk about how you want things to have happen and what things can happen. So you are listening to Mobile Estate Planning with Michael Bailey here on 560 KLZ, The Source. Also heard on 100.7 FM. I hear there's a TuneIn app, and I'm pretty sure that you can hear me at 560thesource.com. Now, in order to listen to me at 560thesource.com, you have to have a decent internet connection and, you know, ability to download data and such things. You know, I was watching a Facebook video the other day, like, oh, you know, all of the sounds you remember of being a kid in the 90s. And it's like, you know, the AOL dial-up, the dial-up modem. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know if I could deal with the dial-up modem and the slow download speed, where you're like, ooh, it's downloading an email. There's another two lines. Wait 2 minutes. Ooh, look, there's another two lines. Yeah, we all remember those days, right? But, you know, we have slightly faster connections now and all that good stuff. So, so we have conversations about what do you want to have happen, because, you know, part of the point of estate planning is so that we have what you want to have happens and not the default rules. Default rules read like this: 1511-101, intestate estate. Any part of a decedent's estate not effectively disposed of by will or otherwise passes by intestate succession to the decedent's heirs as prescribed in this code, except as modified by the decedent's will. So that's the first line. Did we like that first line? What do you think, Dave?
Sounds pretty complicated.
Yeah, what did it say? Do you want me to read it again?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Any part of a decedent's estate not effectively disposed of by will or otherwise passes by intestate succession to the decedent's heirs as prescribed in this code, except as modified by the decedent's will. Can you repeat back to me in plain English what that meant?
Yeah, it said if you die without a will, then it's going to go according to what the judge says or what the probate says, unless you have a will. It kind of double said it there, right?
Okay, we're going to try again. So it says if you don't distribute your property by a will or otherwise, so there's other ways of doing it, like a trust or a beneficiary's deed or something else, then these statutes, the intestate succession, will say what happens, except as modified in a will.
Unless
it's modified by a will. Right. So already in one sentence, I mean, you went straight to judge and probate, and you know, there was no mention of a judge or a probate.
But it said, oh, I just thought I was going for like this, like the legal statute. That's what I assumed that it meant.
I was
wrong.
Intestate succession in this code, the code is the Colorado Revised Statutes.
Okay.
So, you know, we've read one sentence and already we've had confusion.
Yeah.
Should we move on to the next second?
Yeah, let's go.
Okay. A decedent by will may expressly exclude or limit the right of an individual or class to succeed to property of the decedent passing by intestate succession.
I have no clue. I don't know what that means.
It means your will can change these rules.
Oh.
If that individual or member of that class survives the decedent, comma, the share of the decedent's intestate estate to which that class or individual would have succeeded passes as if that individual or each member of that class had disclaimed his or her intestate share. Isn't that exciting?
Yeah, it sounds really fun.
Yeah, yeah. So apparently that means if you survive but you're excluded, then it passes as if you don't get it. Well, sweet. Now we've got one statute down. Moving on. Next statute. If I could get my... All right. So the next statute talks about the share of the spouse. And you know, you'd think this would be fairly simple. Oh, hey, if I die first, my spouse gets everything, right? Nope. The various possible circumstances describing decedent, his or her surviving spouse, and the surviving decedent's, if any, are set forth in this section to be utilized in determining the intestate share of the decedent's surviving spouse. If more than one circumstance is applicable, the circumstance that produces the largest share for the surviving spouse shall be applied. The intestate share of the surviving spouse is. And then there's a colon, and we've got six different options. So isn't that exciting? So basically that means a surviving spouse gets a certain amount. And if two circumstances apply, then they get the higher amount. Because apparently we want to protect spouses. You know, we think that, you know, from a legal perspective, getting married is a good thing. And so from a legal perspective, we're going to give, you know, a fair amount to spouses. Now, this applies to both legally and contractually and, you know, officially married spouses and also to common law spouses. There's not really a distinction made here between a legal spouse and a common law spouse. So common law spouse can be somebody that you live with and have joint things together and hold yourself out as a married couple.
Do you know what it takes in what it legally takes in order to be considered a common law spouse in Colorado?
So the short version is you live together, you sleep together, you have something in common, and you hold yourself out as a married couple.
For how long? Does it matter?
There's no time frame.
Like one day?
No time frame.
Okay, that's crazy.
Well, that's what it is. So, I mean, you know, if you're a common law spouse, or if you were a common law spouse, and you know, say that you lived with somebody for, you know, a couple of months, and you know, held yourself out as a married couple, you had a joint checking account, and you know, all these type of things, and then you break up and you move on, there's no such thing as a common law divorce. So that's kind of exciting. So you can get common law married, but you can't get common law divorced. So this is an interesting trick. You know, so if you've been common law married and then you end up officially marrying someone, I don't think you're necessarily going to be, you know, prosecuted under the bigamy laws and, you know, oh, hey, well, you know, you lived with that girl for about 6 months, you lived with that other girl for about 6 months, and now you're officially marrying this girl. Well, you know, sorry, friend, you now have three wives and you're in trouble and we're going to prosecute you under the polygamy and bigamy laws.
So could former common law spouses lay claim to your assets in your will?
Potentially.
Unless you specifically say they can't or something?
Right. I mean, so people who I know, you know, a lot of people where I write things where they've been officially divorced, I will write, you know, former spouses receive nothing. Like, oh, there we go. You know what? You got divorced. Yeah, life sucks. But there, I mean, we read cases in law school about, like there was, I don't remember if it was Gene Autry or some other famous actor who he'd been married to his wife for, you know, 50 some odd years. And then when he died, his common law spouse from 50, 60 years ago came in and said, oh, well, we were common law married, so you owe me my spousal amount. So they had a big fight over it and, you know, proving you have to prove that you were common law married, you have to prove that, you know, you didn't officially get divorced, you know, all these type of things. So, you know, all these, everything that we do in estate planning seems like, oh, hey, that's pretty easy. That's pretty cool. It's pretty straightforward until you end up where you need to prove all of it. And that's when you really want to have things done right. You know, when everything goes swimmingly and everything goes smooth, it's like, hey, cool. This is awesome. You know, we're doing fine. We're moving on. But then let's say there's a contest or a question or a fight. That's when you want to have everything done properly. You know, if there's not a fight, yeah, whatever. It's all good. Now, if you run into things like, you know, you're trying to transfer real property, you know, the real estate company and the county and the title company, they're all going to want to make sure that they transfer things that people really do know and really do own. You know, if you're going to if we're going to say, all right, we're going to transfer, you know, I'm going to sell my house. Okay, I'm going to sell my house. This is awesome. I'm going to sell my house. Cool. Well, now that I've sold my house, can I sell my house? Who can sell my house? I can sell my house because I own it. My wife and I own it jointly. So we both have to sign off on selling the house, right? Dave, can you sell my house?
No, not unless you ask me to.
Are you sure that you can't sell my house?
I mean, I wouldn't know where to start, but
you wouldn't know where to start. So you could probably figure out how to.
I mean, I probably could.
If you decided that you wanted to impersonate me, you could probably you learn to fake my signature, and you could commit all sorts of fraud to do so. But you could probably sell my house, right?
Well, yeah. If I was
only if you
were really dedicated
me.
to something,
right? So you know, Dave, I know you couldn't because you would not reach that level of criminal activity, and you have integrity, and you're an honest person, and things like that.
Right.
But in general, you know, you can only sell your own house, right?
Right.
And there's lots of, you know, the county will check that, the notary will check that, the title company will check that. We don't want people who aren't you transferring your assets. You know, for some reason, we're like that. Weird. You know, it's one of the reasons that we go through the probate process is because when you're dead, you can't transfer your assets. So, Dave, if you were a ghost, you know, it's Halloween time, right? We're in the middle of October. If you were a ghost, could you sign your name to sell a property?
Maybe with a Ouija board.
Or, you know, I mean, I've seen different movies where ghosts can, like, move things around and stuff. But, you know, under Colorado law, we're not going to recognize you as a ghost.
Well, in your current commercial running in Rush to Reason, there's a medium in there talking to the other side.
This is true. Yeah, I do remember that, you know, and I also remember the ghost court one.
Ghost court, yeah.
Where, client, Your Honor, I think my client's testimony should be admitted. Is your client a ghost and dead? Why, yes. But why should that stop them from being able to testify? Well, because the law says so. Thank you for asking. But you need to have, you know, in order to transfer things, you need to have legal authority to do so. I have legal authority to transfer my assets because I'm me. Now, if I die, legal authority has to be granted by someone. So this is why a personal representative has to get legal authority granted by the probate court. Otherwise, they don't have legal authority to be transferring assets. That's one of the reasons we have probate court and go through it with will. Now, a trust, one of the things you can do as a trust is you set up a trust, and when you set up a trust, you empower the trustee to deal with your assets. Now, a lot of times in a revocable living trust, you are the trustee. So you empower yourself as the trustee to deal with your assets. You say to yourself, self, I would like you to be in charge of my assets. And yourself says, okay, self, I also will be happy to be in charge of assets for you, self. And the self says, thank you, self. And you go back self. Now, if you actually have that conversation, you're like me, and I've found that talking to myself sometimes is the only way I keep myself sane. You know, and those of you who are out there are like, wait a minute, that doesn't make any sense. I'm like, yes, I know. That's one of the reasons is that a trust will avoid probate is because a trust survives your death. And a trust continues on after your death, so you just have a successor trustee who comes in and can take care of stuff. So you are listening to Mobile Estate Planning with Michael Bailey here on 560 KLZ, The Source, also heard on 100.7 FM, 560thesource.com, and the TuneIn app. Studio number to talk to us on air is 303-477-5600, and my direct line is 720-394-6887. So what we've seen from probate code is that probate code favors spouses. They like spouses. As a matter of fact, the spouse gets the entire estate if no descendant or parent of the decedent survives the decedent. So if you are married and your spouse dies and you have no children and no parents, you get everything. Yay! Now, or all the decedent's surviving descendants are also descendants of the surviving spouse, and there is no other descendant of the surviving spouse who survives the decedent. That one clear, Dave? I'm just running things by you.
No, I don't. I mean, I can't keep up with you. It makes me think LegalZoom would be really hard for me to navigate.
Well, LegalZoom will probably try to translate this into, plain English as well, just like I am. But that one said, if you and your spouse have kids together, and your spouse dies, you still get everything. because it's the kids are children of both spouses. So that makes sense. But what happens if it's a second marriage? Or what happens if your spouse has a child from a previous marriage? Do you get everything then? Why, no. No, you do not. But instead you get, well, that's situation three, sorry. The first $250,000 plus one half of any balance of the intestate estate, if the decedent's surviving decedents are also descendants of the surviving spouse, and the surviving spouse has one or more decedent or descendant who are not descendants of the decedent. See, descendant, decedent, decedent, descendant. Man, trying to read these, I was trying to read it fast. I'm like, that has an extra S in it, so it's a descendant. That doesn't, so that's a decedent. So the idea is if you are, so it's like a second marriage, you have kids together, and your spouse has a child that was from a different marriage. Well, without a will, then the surviving spouse gets $250,000 plus half of the estate. And where does the other half go? Why, it goes to the children. Awesome, right? Let's see here. Up here, option two. The first $300,000 plus three-fourths of the balance of the intestate estate, if no descendant of the decedent survives the decedent, but the parent of the decedent survives the decedent. So let's say you're married. You die before your spouse, but your parents are still alive. That means your spouse doesn't get everything. Your spouse gets the first $300,000 plus three-fourths of the estate, and the other quarter goes to the parents. So that's kind of exciting. So if your parents live longer than you and you don't have a will, and this takes over, then your parents get some money. Isn't that an exciting time? Don't you suppose your spouse will be just thrilled about that?
Yeah, I'm sure. Now, can in that, let's say that situation does happen, could, let's say, your parents who survived you say, I don't want this, and just give it?
Yes, they have the ability to disclaim. Right.
They can say, I don't want it, and just give it all to the spouse or whatever?
Right. But
cool.
It could also be a lot simpler that you write a will and you say, if I die first, my spouse gets everything. That makes it pretty clear.
A will makes it easier.
Yes, it does. Or a trust makes it easier. The default rules are always an interesting one here. And then down here, we have another situation. The first $150,000 plus one half of the balance of the intestate estate, if one or more of the decedent's surviving descendants are not descendants of the surviving spouse. Now, that's an exciting time right there. So that means you're on a second marriage, you have kids with your spouse, and you have one kid of your own, then your spouse dies. Well, you only get $150,000 plus half of the intestate estate, and then the rest goes to the kids. So, and, the dollar amounts could be increased or decreased based on the cost of living adjustments as calculated in another section. But the one half is modified by another statute that talks about how if you've only been married for 1 year or 2 years. So it depends on time. This is assuming you've been married for a long time. Because if you've only been, let's say that you're on a second you're on a second or a third marriage, and you've only been married for 3 or 4 years. Well, if you've only been married for 3 or 4 years, you're not going to inherit the same as if you've been married for a long time. My parents have been married for, 40 plus years. Let's see if we can count it out. It's like 44 years they've been married. Well, if they've been married for 44 years, they'd have had everything in common for 44 years. It would make sense that everything would go to the kids, or to the spouse, and then on to the kids later on. And then you run into this kind of fun one. Relatives of half-blood inherit the same share they would if they were whole-blood. So if you have half-brothers and sisters, they inherit the same as if they were your full brother and sister. Later on there's something that talks about, stepkids and whether or not they need to be, actually officially adopted or not. There's all sorts of things that are involved in that. There's something about individuals being related by two bloodlines. And then we get into parents being barred from inheriting in certain circumstances. So if parental rights were terminated, so if you're like an emancipated minor, or if you get divorced and somebody switches off. You know, there's in that case, they're not necessarily going to be able to inherit. So, you know, as you can see, the further we delve into this, it gets more and more complicated and more things, because the statutes are we even have a statute that says, you know, regardless of the marital status of the parents, you're still a parent-child relationship if the child is a genetic child of the two of you, whether or not they're married or not, and all those type of things. So, you know, the statutes are so general because they have to cover all of these general rules. You know, parent-child exists between an adoptee and an adoptee's adoptive parents or parents. So if you adopt somebody, then you get the same inheritance rights as if you're a naturally born child. And you can actually have adult adoption, where you can adopt an adult instead of just a child. It's less common, but it is there. And so all of these things, you get all of these, you know, questions and concerns and, you know, the general rules and all of these things that are come up. And, you know, a child born to a gestational carrier. So, you know, if the woman happens to be pregnant when their husband dies, you know, what do we do with that? All of those type of things. You know, we have general rules on them. And then you go, okay, well, what's going on with these general rules? What's going on with these difficult, if we've got default rules, man, this can get really messy. So the easiest way to avoid these default rules is, like it says at the very beginning, you can change the default rules. You can change what you want to have happen. And you can show whatever you want to have happen through a will or through a trust. And if you modify things through a will or through a trust, you'll be amazed how well you find that your wishes are carried out. So thank you so much for listening to Mobile Estate Planning with Michael Bailey here on 560 KLZ The Source, also heard on 100.7, 560thesource.com, and in the TuneIn app. I will be back next week, but coming up next, we've got John Rush and Rush Reason. Stay tuned and listen to him. Thanks and have a great day.
Mobile Estate Planning with Michael Bailey will return to ATX next Wednesday at 2:30 here on KLZ 560 The Source, AM 560, FM 100.7, and online at 560thesource.com.
Views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of Crawford Broadcasting, the station, management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.